When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shouldn't you be at work?
Oh, here's Gascoigne. Gascoigne, you can finish it here! Paul Gascoigne! 2-0!
Lampard!
Brilliant!
It was in, no!
That surely crossed the line!
Oh, oh.
It's so far in!
Thanks very much, Sepp Blatter.
Clean sheet, I call it. It's one of the most important things in football.
Nice to see home fans booing you.
Emil Heskey, could it be five? Yes, it is!
Paul Bowden to take it. Oh, and he's hit the crossbar!
Gerrard, it's Carroll! What a goal by the England striker! That's why he was brought in, and he's done the job.
Saved! John Pickford! England on the brink!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, it happened!
No!
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? We are topical. We're going to focus on Euro 2021. It's actually happening. I'm Chris Gold. Joining me, as always, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And the man who will be watching Euro 2021 from his helicopter circling Wembley, it's Michael Mard.
Hello.
This episode is the first of our two Euros preview specials, focusing mainly on how it's going to be for England fans. Whether England are going to do well, but more really, previous experiences of England in tournaments, stuff like that. Let's put it this way. I think this next hour of your life, this is how every fan will be feeling before the Euros. We have another preview when we'll be coming to Scotland, Wales, and the Euros in general. So don't worry about that. That will be dropping next Friday.
And we've got a special guest right in from the top. Matt Ford.
Hello. Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here at the top. I love the... Here's the electronic post bag.
Well, should we just get straight into it then?
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the electronic post bag.
You got mail.
So, I've decided to pick out some electronic post bags that feel correct for what we're doing, which is Euro 2021 preview special.
Great.
From James Moore. Subject: unpopular opinion - Gaza goal.
Uh-oh. The Scottish are here.
This is from a Mr. C. Hendry.
Having watched multiple angles, I've come to the somewhat controversial opinion that Gaza's goal against Scotland isn't that good.
What?
Hear me out. He did incredible things at that tournament. A lot of them better in terms of skill required than the goal. I think, and watch closely, the flick over Hendry comes off his shin and goes higher than he means it to. Also, I think it's not that hard to pull off. The finish is quite simply scuffed and the keeper should have saved it.
I mean...
I'm quietly confident Josh may agree. Cheers, James. Who wants to start? I think we'll start with Michael.
Well, I mean, I've never heard every single syllable of a sentence be wrong before. That's an awful, awful take.
Can I just say, I watched the clip the other day and I thought, he does scuff the finish. He does scuff it.
He does scuff the finish. He does scuff the finish.
He's right there.
I think the flick is amazing. I think the finish goes in. So what can you say? But I wouldn't say it's like a great finish.
Right. If the flick's not that good, that makes the finish even more incredible, because then he's got to correct the plan. And then the finish... he gets it right, because if he hits it with any other part of his leg, then it's not going to go the way it goes, does it? So it's perfection.
I also think what always gets forgotten, which is interestingly not addressed in that, is context. With great goals, context is so important. He has scored that goal against Scotland in the Euros at Wembley. That counts for so much. If he scores that like 3-1 up at Lazio in a game that no one cares about, no one remembers, yeah, who cares? But like, it's so, so vital when and where a goal is scored, as well as the goal itself.
That's so true.
Yeah. Do you know what as well? We've just saved a penalty as well. And don't forget that goal is late in the game. 79 minutes he scores that. So we're 1-0 up.
Was it that late?
Yeah, we concede that penalty, saved it, and then more or less straight up the other end to score it and wrap the game up. So don't forget how much drama is in that moment too.
As if resuming the oldest rivalry in international football was not enough, the context of this mighty clash within the competition of the European Championship finals for Neville. Ball is a terrific one for McCall. That's Jury. Penalty. England gets in with a penalty again. Tony Adams on Gordon Jury. So last Saturday it was Turquille Mans of Switzerland. Now it's Gary McAllister of Scotland. And Sydney. And England celebrates joyously. Come up trumps on the big day.
Yeah, when you watch that game back, Scotland are in it. It's not a drubbing. It's fairly evenly placed. And he was playing for Rangers at the time, which is even more added context. He was living and playing in Glasgow.
Plus, imagine the energy that was going around, considering what Yuri Geller had been up to 60 seconds earlier. You don't clear... The crystals don't calm down that quickly, do they? There still must have been crystal pulses going around Wembley that time.
Yeah, if it wasn't for those pulses... Yeah, if it wasn't for those pulses, he'd have smashed it in the top corner. The fact that he did it on top of that makes the goal even better.
Okay, as it's an international thing, we've been discussing players that have played... a lot of international games, but not played many domestic games. So we had a player, didn't we, who'd played a third of his career at international level.
Yeah.
This is from Chris. Chris McKeown. Hi, guys. Love the show and listen every week from sunny Hong Kong. After your recent discussions about international caps, I stumbled across Sadiq Al-Fattouri. Now, he was not a 90s player, though he was born in 1993. However, his career consists... of 3 club appearances and 6 international appearances.
Oh, wow.
How has that happened?
Yeah, checks out.
Does it?
Yeah.
Always good to know that Skull's listening with his ears, but already on Google, double-checking everything that's written.
Just to make sure. 6 appearances for Libya. He actually played for United. He played 1 game for Salford City, then played for United for 2 years. I say played, he didn't play a game. Then Chesterfield, then Tripoli, and he has never played a game since. Domestic.
But in that time, he played 6 games for the Libyan national team.
Crazy.
That's got to be a record, hasn't it?
I think the international career of anyone who has played for a country led by Colonel Gaddafi has to be slightly called into question. If you're living under the rule of a despot who can like imprison the national team, it actually makes it far more likely that the average Joe could end up representing their team internationally.
Didn't Colonel Gaddafi's son play football? I think he played for Perugia in the 90s, Colonel Gaddafi's son.
Yeah, and he only played 7 games for Chesterfield, but he played 19 games for Perugia.
And I think something that will go, to complete the postbag, something that I think will go a long way through this tournament. And Matt, we'd like, well, have a think on your own. We're disallowing the 1990 and 1996 World Cup semi and Euro 96 semi-finals. But if you could change one result in history, ooh, which result would you change? We've had a lot in, and I think this one is quite a good one. This is from Thomas Shepherd. Hello, everyone. Love the show, etc., etc. This question is changing a 90s football result that gives me hours of thinking, but I had a light bulb moment during your Ian Moore Blackburn episode. I'm a Leeds fan, and if I'm honest, I've never got over the sale of Eric Cantona to Manchester United. At the time, I would say I was 7 years old, we were champions, and I remember how upset my dad was, and it felt like a death in the family to me. The result I would change from this is Blackburn winning the 1992 playoff final against Leicester. Following Blackburn's promotion, they paid a record transfer fee for Alan Shearer. I'm almost certain that even with Jack Walker's millions, Shearer wouldn't have gone to Blackburn had they not been promoted, and Manchester United would have got that man that summer, especially having just lost the title to us. Having secured the services of Shearer, I'm certain they wouldn't have gone and signed Cantona. My theory is that although Shearer's fantastic and would have scored 25 goals a season, he wouldn't have had the effect on Manchester United that Cantona did. The mentality he brought to the so-called class of 92, the way he trained, lived, etc., as stated by Ferguson and Martin Edwards, that helped change the DNA of the whole club. Without Cantona, they may not even have won the first Premiership. A couple more years without a title, Fergie could have been sacked. Having not instilled this mentality, Man U would not have gone on to be the force they were. It's up for debate. Shearer could have had a great effect on the club, but when Newcastle emerged in the force of the 90s, he'd have kicked up the fuss, gone there with the love of his hometown club. What do you think, Michael?
I mean, it's an interesting one. I don't think you can underestimate Cantona's influence, but I would argue that Alan Shearer does equally as good a job if we had signed him instead of Cantona. I think we're still as strong in a different way. I think you'd be splitting hairs there because I think Shearer scores 30 plus goals a season in that United team. Like we were a really great side anyway. He was the sort of finishing touches, Cantona. But Shearer was already a beast at a young age.
Yeah.
Skull?
He's a goal scorer, isn't he, Alan Shearer? I don't think of that Eric Cantona as a goal scorer. I mean, he does score goals, but he's not as rampant as Alan Shearer is. Like, I think that United, it's scary, the idea of Shearer being in that United team in the early mid-90s.
Matt Ford, what game would you change?
Well, the two that immediately spring to mind are the England-Holland qualifier for the 94 World Cup, and Koeman gets sent off.
Skull strangely chose not that one, but an earlier group game against Norway that would have given us the points, meaning we didn't need to beat Holland, which he says is a more exciting way to do it.
Holland-Poland that night. Like the night we beat San Marino, Poland beat Holland by 3 goals, and I think we qualify.
Oh, wow. That would have been great.
Yeah.
The other one, I think, is England-France in Euro 92. You know the one where Pierce gets headbutted by Basil Boley and then has that free kick right near the end and hits the underside of the bar. And I'd have that go in and have us beat France.
And then what would have happened? We'd have gone through and then we'd have just gone out in the semi.
Probably.
But you know what?
Better than what happened.
Better than what happened.
May not have been the forgotten tournament had that happened.
May not have been the forgotten tournament. And Pierce, maybe, you know, that would have been his moment of revenge in 1992 rather than having to wait until 1996. Oh,
yeah. But then 96 would still happen, so then he'd have two amazing moments.
Exactly. Thank you for all your correspondence. Do get in touch like this.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list at quicklykevin.com.
Now, it's here. It's Euro... Are we calling it Euro 2020 or 2021?
I'm a bit confused.
Should we choose a house style?
Yeah, what are people doing about this? You can't call it Euro 2020.
You can because that's on all the branding. I've got the sticker book.
They're not going to redo all of the branding and the artwork, so it's whether we're going to supersede that.
Do you think anyone's confused?
What, do you think anyone's thinking there's two different tournaments?
The problem is, if you call it Euro 2021, it does make it sound like you've got a load of fake shit you're trying to flog down the market. Yeah, it's authentic, Euro 2021, yeah. FIFA said they had to reprint it, innit? Yeah, that's why it's cheap.
If they'd renamed it, the Euro 2020 stuff would have been worth so much, wouldn't it, in years to come?
Yes.
The ghost tournament. I've written down some things we want to discuss. Today, really, this is the first of our two preview shows. What I really want to discuss are our excitement for the tournament, how we're going to experience it, and what we're looking forward to, how it compares to previous years. And then we will discuss England. And we will go on in the next preview show. Don't worry, we'll be discussing Scotland, Wales, and all the other teams in the next preview show. So let's start by just asking a simple question. Compared to previous tournaments, how excited, how much anticipation do you have for this?
Oh, I have loads. I'm so excited. And I think it's partly because a lot of it's being hosted here, but also because on the back of that World Cup, and then the fact that England seemed to have an even better squad than we had when we got to the World Cup semi-finals, it feels like, and I really hope I'm not tempting fate and setting myself up for a fall, it does feel like if we're going to do something, this is going to be it. This feels like the best chance we've had. And we've got games at Wembley.
Can I ask you, Matt, how often do you say that?
Every 2 years. Yeah. But I think it really is true this time. Unless we improve even more, certainly it feels like this is the best since 2004, really.
Yeah.
And you think a lot of it's at home. You go into this with like Kane fit and being the golden boot scorer in the Premier League. You go into it with Foden and Mount and all these amazing, Grealish. Like, think of the players we didn't have at the World Cup and how great we were then. And I know we rode our luck, but you have to be in a position to do that. And I just feel like it's kind of, feels like it's all come together at the right time.
Do you feel more excited for this than young Matt felt in 1996?
Oh, you know what? I think I'm pretty much the same. I think all the conditions are kind of there. I just love England anyway. So I think I'm always very excited because I always think, oh, you know what? We've never really had a terrible team. There's always been a Rooney or a Gerrard where you go,
there's always been a reason.
Sorts of players, that you could, if it goes our way, and then obviously it's turned out that we've been terrible. But after 2018, you think, we seem to have sorted that problem out now. We play good football. We seem to know how to win games, even late. And now we've got these amazing players. The two English teams in the Champions League final. And it feels like it's all coming together.
Chris, is that how you feel?
We have to win. Matt has got me pumped up. I'm exactly the same as Matt. Every tournament I go into it thinking, oh, we're going to win it this year. But then you just look at, like Matt says, like we've got two English teams in the Champions League final. English teams are dominating the sport on a European level right now. We've got English players winning the Champions League on a semi-regular basis. And the bookies agree with us. We're second favourites.
The bookies always put England to...
But I don't think they do.
I don't want to get boring on this, but the way it works is more people in England bet on England, making our odds shorter. And can I just say, that is one of the thickest things you can do. Because the odds are shorter. That I remember the day before the 2006 World Cup, going into a bookies, in the days when you used to go into a bookies, to put some bets on like £2 on top scorer, that kind of bet. And I saw a man on Lavender Hill in Clapham peel out 5 crisp £20 notes to bet on England to win the World Cup. And I thought, you are thick. Because...
And that man was Chris Skull.
You're getting bad odds. And also, I can see you're an England fan. And you're like, if England win the World Cup, the fact you doubled your £100 is worth neither here nor there to you. There's no point in ever betting on the team you support.
I couldn't agree more. Why do you want the double jeopardy of losing and losing money? Surely hedge and bet on the opposite team. So at least if the thing you want to happen doesn't happen, you've got some cash at the end of it.
Well, I've talked to Michael before about this. Michael saw me do this. I had a bit of a moment during England v Colombia in 2018 when during extra time, in a panic, I've never bet this amount of money before. I put £300 on Colombia.
I didn't know you'd done that.
Yeah, and I'd like the country in turn should be thanking me for this sacrifice.
Well, don't forget as well, you couldn't handle the tension of the penalty shootout, so you just went to a park. You're one of those guys who couldn't look at the penalties. Like, if you were in the centre circle, you'd be turned away.
The penalties began. I walked out of the house, sat in the park, and I put on my headphones. And I listened to Three Lions, a song
which reminds me of defeat. Like, I listened to a song that reminded me of historic defeat. Michael, how are you feeling? By the way, this isn't the section we're meant to be talking about England. Just to be clear.
I would say...
But that's not for you, Michael.
No, I mean, I would say, like, I'm really excited. I've sort of slightly checked out of international football for a long time in the sort of from about 2006 onwards, as we
like Andy Cole, yeah. Like Paul Scholes as well.
You just, yeah, they kept taking my opinions and playing them out of position. I genuinely think we're in with a chance, and I can't sort of muster the same levels of enthusiasm, unsurprisingly, as Chris and 4D, but I think we do have the quality there in the squad for the first time in a long time. But in terms of like the tournament, I think the World Cup sort of slightly reignited a love affair with England and the national team in a way that had been lacking for a very long time. And I was so excited about the Euros had they happened last summer, because we were going to go to some games. You know, we were going to travel around to different places in Europe and kind of experience it in the stadiums firsthand. So I'm slightly mourning the loss of that experience. But now we're getting closer and closer to the tournament. I'm like, oh no, I am actually like really, really excited again. And I think, yeah, I genuinely think we are, I'm going to say it, I think we're in with a chance.
Well, we will come to England in a bit. I just think that the reaction you guys had to Michael saying that was pathetic. It was like, it reminded me of, you know, the audience at an episode of Friends, when two characters kiss, yeah, and they cheer and you're like, oh, fuck off.
Well, this actually touches on a feature I want to introduce. Like what are the looking for omens? Like Michael talking then. Michael, who doesn't talk up England's chances usually, saying he thinks we're in with a chance. That for me is an omen. Like, oh, this could happen. And we were chatting the other day about...
What, the Marden omen?
We were chatting the other day about the octopus. Do you remember the octopus in 2006?
Oh, predicted
England win. And we were discussing just that pyramid theory in 1998. Do you remember?
The pyramid theory in 1998, which I bought into wholeheartedly. Do you remember this, Michael?
No.
And 4D?
Oh.
So this was based on what I would describe as a perfect piece of maths. So you go to 1970. No, so you go to 1966, the most overrated World Cup in history, okay, which England won. 1970, Brazil. So it goes England, Brazil, Germany, Argentina. Italy is the peak of the pyramid.
Yeah.
And then back down the other side, it reflects back. Italy, Argentina, Germany, Brazil.
Wow.
And then it was like, well, the next step in the pyramid in 1998 is England.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing this and thinking, I just don't see how this can't happen.
I love how the bloke in William Hill is thick as shit, but a bloke is like, thinks that what team won in 1966 will affect the outcome in 1998 is perfect on math.
Do you remember, as well, I remember in 2002, I think it was The Sun ran a front page, and it was all the omens about why we were going to win the World Cup in 2002. And one of them was that there were three England players who played for West Ham at a World Cup for the first time since 1966. So anyway... We've heard a good omen from Michael there. I'd love you to send in, what are the omens that England are going to win this European Championship?
Yeah, all the worst omens you've ever hung on to. Because I really felt like Euro 96 being the 30th anniversary of 1966 and our first tournament at home in England, even though they're both completely spurious things, I hung a lot on that. It felt to me inevitable we were going to win that as well.
Yeah. Send them in. hello@quicklykevin.com. Wherever you spot them, more pathetic the better. Omens that we're going to win. Send them in.
Miss. Pizza Hut Pan Peters. Unless I'm mistaken... Thank you. Miss. Come on, Gareth. It only took me 6 years to get over it. Have some pan pizza.
Pan pizza from Pizza Hut. A light, fluffy base with a crispy crust smothered with generous toppings.
Thanks a lot, boys. I feel much better now.
Ooh, this time he's at the post.
Pizza Hut pan pizza. It always hits the spot.
Now, before we get back to our Euros preview episode with Matt Ford, we'd like to let you know about all the exciting content we've got coming up over the next greatest month of your lives. Throughout the Euros, we will be doing 3 episodes a week. The Monday ones are on our main feed, and the Wednesday and Friday ones are available for XJ8 members of the fan club. That's www.patreon.com/quicklykevin. There is also watch-alongs. On Sunday, we will be doing our first watch-along, which is if you are thinking you want to watch the final England friendly, but worry it might be as boring as England versus Austria, watch it with us. We will be watching it on YouTube, joined by Quickly Kevin favourite Charlie Baker. We can all watch it together. You can pose your questions to us. We'll talk throughout it. If you want to watch that, we'll be putting all the links. We'll be sending them out through the mailing list. Sign up to the mailing list or on our social media on the day. So we do look forward to people joining us for that on Sunday afternoon. Then throughout the Euros for XJ8 members, we will be doing watch-alongs of various games starting on Tuesday, when we have France versus Germany, the big one on Tuesday night. France versus Germany, watch that with us. Is there anything else people need to know, Michael?
There is. We've also got the Championship Manager 97-98 Euro 96 tournament, where we'll be playing against Quickly Kevin fan club members to see who wins that. We've got some great prizes and stuff to give away.
Michael's been on eBay.
I've spent £1,000 on 90s football goodies that we'll be giving away throughout the tournament. We've also got, excitingly coming up, we've got our own Euros Fantasy Premier League style tournament that we'll be announcing in the next preview episode. So anyone that signs up to that will be in with a chance of winning prizes, and the winner will get a huge bundle of football goodies. This is going to be one hell of a summer, as long as England make it out of the group stages.
It's going to be the summer of your life, as long as England make it out of the group stages. Gareth, we need you to do that, mainly for us, because we have overcommitted. So, genuinely, thank you to anyone who has supported this huge white elephant of an adventure by signing up to the Patreon. It's genuinely appreciated. We cannot wait for all of this. The Euros is going to be amazing. Let's get more excited. Back to our Euro 2021 preview with Matt Ford. This is a question I want to ask, really, which is, because you're all excited, but can, and I know you all loved World Cup 2018, can a modern tournament, when you're an adult, ever be, in the same way, can Christmas ever be as good as it was when you were 12? In the same way, Christmas is never as good as it was when you were 7. Can an international tournament ever be as good as it was when you were 13? If England were to win, or Scotland, or Wales, would it be as good as Euro 96?
Well, if Scotland or Wales win, no, absolutely not.
What's your view on that?
Yeah, Matt, I mean, absolutely. I think the longer you go without having won it, the bigger it becomes. So it just grows over time, because we haven't won anything in our lifetimes. And we've only got to semi-finals. We've never got to a final. I just think it will go absolutely ballistic. And I think you can enjoy it more when you drink. Like, ask the people at the Croydon Box Park if they were as happy as they were at 7. Like, they were the happiest they'd ever been. It was like, that was way better than anything Santa gave them. But I just think now it just, and equally, let's say it happens when we're in our 50s, it would just be the biggest thing. It'd be one of the biggest things that happens in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly off the back of the 18 months we've just had, I suppose.
Yeah.
I would say I'd still consider Italia 90 and Euro 96 to be more vivid experiences in my life.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can replace those moments. It's like bands that you first get into. There's that sort of sweet spot, yes, in your formative years where you're still being formed in terms of your kind of tastes and your cultural capital. You know, you will never love a band the way you love Oasis 4D. It doesn't matter if someone comes along, because they were the right band at the right time and the right moment in your life. And like, my sort of direct comparison is, we got to the semi-finals of the World Cup in 2018 and it was amazing, but that doesn't come anywhere close to the experience of getting to the semi-finals in Italia 90 for me. Like, it's just emotionally, the investment isn't there. And I was at that game in Russia and it was brilliant. Like, it was amazing. And had we gone through, it probably would have eclipsed it. And had we won it, obviously it would have. But I do not think about that semi-final at all. I think about Italia 90 probably every single day. I'm drinking my coffee from an Italia 90 cup right now. Like, there is nowhere you can look in my office where I'm sat now that you can't see a chow in some form, whether it's a poster, a toy, a dancing chow, like one of those sort of flower pot things. Like, it's...
That is giving me anxiety, the thought of being sat in an office surrounded by miniature chows.
Michael has also taken a tab of LSD, we should say.
You know, I would just say, I would love it if we win these Euros, but I would, like, there is a, when we nearly won it in, 2018, there is a bit of me that goes, oh, I wish we'd have won it. This is great, but I wish we'd have won it in 96.
I think, I believe that every tournament that you live through now is seen through the vision of the ones you lived in as a child. Ooh. I believe when you're watching 2018, you're thinking, this is what Euro 96 would have been like if I was a grown-up.
Yeah.
This is what Italia 90 would have been like. Do you know what I mean? I think everything relates to those first experiences. On this, excluding Euro 96 and Italia 90, which we talk about too much. Well, we've come outside of the 90s, okay?
Okay.
For the first time. And I think it's interesting to discuss those 90s ones. They defined us, but since
2004 was just amazing.
You don't know what my question is. Since 2000, oh, no. When was the last time you kissed a girl?
It's actually before that.
No, since 2000, what are your best and worst international tournaments? Ooh. So you're going to go with 2004?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Apart from 2018... 2004, at one point, when we beat Croatia and Rooney was on fire, I thought we were going to win it. I thought we looked absolutely supreme. And he was just like the player of the tournament at that point. And it felt winnable. And again, with the Euros, you think, oh, it's a smaller tournament.
I actually think 2006 is the worst tournament of all.
What?
I thought 2010 was terrible, wasn't it?
What was 2010?
South Africa was a waste of everybody's sailors.
Time. Oh, yeah, that was rubbish.
Yeah.
2012 is absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
When we got to the penalty shootout, England v Italy in 2012, I genuinely thought, I don't mind if we lose here. I don't care. I genuinely don't care. 2006 is the least fulfilling tournament because I believed we were going to win it. I actually believed we were going to win it. Not because of a mathematical pyramid that I'd worked. But genuinely, it felt like it. And it was just rubbish. We were just... rubbish.
The 2010 World Cup, I was actually working for Formula One at the time. And because it was England-Germany, what was it? Was that the round of 16 when we played them? And Mercedes put on a big thing. So they had their Mercedes motorhome. I can't remember what Grand Prix it was. I think it might have been like the Canada Grand Prix. And up they said, right, English upstairs and all the Germans downstairs. So look, all the English engineers, and we were invited as the BBC to go stand in the upstairs bit and the Germans underneath. But what we discovered when the Germans scored the first goal was that the Germans were actually watching it on German telly, but their feed was about 10 seconds ahead of our feed upstairs.
Oh, no.
So as we were watching the game evolve, you could hear them going mad downstairs. And then 10 seconds later, you'd see England concede another goal.
Oh, no.
But then you had that bit when Lampard scores and they're like, oh, no. We're like, oh, come on, something's about to happen. We scored it. And then you realise he's not going to give it. That was a horrendous day. And then as we were walking out, they gave us all complimentary German shirts. Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Did you keep it?
I did keep it. I don't know where it is now.
Michael, what are your best and worst tournaments since 2000?
I really enjoyed Euro 2000. It's probably too close to the 90s, but I'm a big fan of when a team wins a World Cup and then wins the next Euros or vice versa. I like to see that continuation, and I really love that France.
Strange thing to be a fan of.
I really loved that France 98 team. And, you know, all of those players. I loved Zidane. And I like seeing that sort of continuity.
So will you be backing France here?
I mean, if we're talking predictions, I think France will win it, yes.
But do you want them to win it because of continuity?
Well, I would rather England won it to start a new continuity for the next World Cup.
Yeah.
But were England not to win it, then yes, France would probably be my second choice. And that would be one of the reasons. All of the rest of the sort of Euros and World Cups, 2002 onwards, I really struggle to pick out individual moments. It's just sort of 18 plus years of just consistent disappointment to the point where, like, I couldn't get excited because every time I did, it wasn't even like a glorious defeat or, you know, a semi-final defeat. It was like, oh, we just limped out of that. Like we wasted, I would say, two cycles of really great players that probably weren't good enough to win a major tournament, or maybe once, but they didn't even punch their weight for close to 20 years. So it really sucked the love out of international football for me until this sort of most recent batch. And, you know, I don't think Gareth Southgate is an elite manager, but a bit like Solskjaer at United, I like that he sort of steered the ship in the right direction in the hope that, you know, this new generation of players will eventually, hopefully, win something.
Yeah. I think this, the amount of England talk does bring to bearing a question, which is, how do you feel? And it does kind of play into these tournaments. So you enjoyed Euro 2000, Michael, but England went out in the group stages. How much do you engage once England have gone out?
I still quite heavily. I often enjoy it more once England have gone out because there's obviously I don't enjoy the experience of England going out, but once they are out, no one can hurt me then. I can't be hurt. I'm invincible.
You can't kill me. I'm already dead.
So I can just enjoy the spectacle and the football. Yeah. Every match then is a potential carnival of football. It's not me there going, fucking hell, this is bleak. Because all I care about is the good stuff and the bad stuff's forgotten.
I can see that, but I don't enjoy the spectacle particularly. It all feels, the bit after England have gone out, I don't know if we said this before, if it's the bit in Deal or No Deal when they've already taken the money. And then they're still opening the boxes and you're like, this is fucking pointless now.
Does that depend when they've gone out for you? Or you know, if England go out...
I'll be honest with you. I half-heartedly watched the World Cup final in 2018. There's a world in which I wouldn't have watched it if I'd had other commitments.
Yes. I would, in terms of enjoying the rest of the tournament, I'd rather England went out, didn't get out of the group, than went out in the semi-final because the final then is just tinged with such disappointment. Obviously, I'd rather England went as far as possible for the enjoyment of England, but watching that final in Russia was really difficult. In the same way watching Germany beat the Czechs, it was like, we would have beaten this fucking team. Like, we would have beaten them. And that's really, it's like a second bitter pill to swallow. But if they go out in the group stages, I'm like, well, obviously that's horrible. We'll have the post-mortem about that. But now I'm just going to enjoy this tournament because every single game, I'm not thinking, oh my God, do I want Denmark or do I want Sweden to win here because we're going to face them next?
Everything is
informed by your team's experience. And I really enjoy a World Cup outside of England's experience.
I wish I could be more like you. Once we're out, I'm just, it's dead to me. Like, it's like, and it's tormenting. It's like leaving the Christmas tree up too late. You're like, I'm going to have to take this down and it's going to feel sad. And it's just like, I was loving this so much. Why is it over? Am I ever got to wait ages for it to come round again? Why is life so unfair? And then just, oh no. I just want us to go as far. And you know what I love about it is the further we go, you can feel the sort of center of gravity building around it. You can feel more and more people start to talk about it. And then the whole country, it snowballs. And it happens every time we start to get to the latter stages. More and more people. And it's almost just like this spell takes over everyone. And there is a kind of magic to it. And really, I only do care about England. I'll watch the rest of it as long as we're in it. But the moment we're out, it might as well be a different sport. I'm just like, fuck.
It's funny that you touched on there, 40. Like, one of my favourite things about international tournaments is when England are playing is when the country comes to a stop. You know, when you can just sense that the country has stopped to watch this game. And like,
do you know what I want to hear, Chris?
Go on.
I want to hear that the National Grid are worried about the surge of electricity from Kattles at halftime. That's what I want to hear. That's the moment.
Do you know what? Who the fuck is having a cup of tea at halftime? Like, enough that it's affecting the National Grid. Like, the last thing you want. And it's always the summer tournament. It was a fucking hot tea. Have a beer.
Everyone's straightening their hair at halftime. The electricity's going to go through the roof. Yeah, it is. That has got to be the maddest news story you could have. The National Grid's cup of tea worries.
Now it'd be like the National Grid are worried that, like, the perfect draft home beer kegs are going to all come on. Tiny Rebel are going to have a run on some IPA.
The nation's fridge doors have opened all at the same time.
Yeah, all the little fridge lights have come on at the same time. Do you think there wasn't that culture then of how people watch football now in the 90s? Because I don't believe there was. I do believe it was a tea-led place. Euro 96 was the tournament of tea before about 2002. Lager took over as the national drink of the football tournament.
I don't know. I feel like in 96, like that was the round the Loaded magazine, Lad Culture. I think the beers is probably
maybe we were just young. Yeah. Maybe we were just young.
Was everyone watching Italia 90 having fucking cups of tea? A half time semi-final of the World Cup, a cup of tea.
Croydon Fan Park would have been unbearable if it was tea. Scalding off.
Sugar in it, you'll melt my face.
So, what were we saying on that? I can't remember what we were talking
about.
I
just love the country shutting down. I love those big moments, and hopefully we'll get one in this tournament.
Yeah. I vividly remember before the game against Croatia, walking back, I'd done last leg, I'd been in the office that day. I remember walking back from the tube in Bethnal Green and walking past a pub beer garden, and it was full of pensive people. It was 4 p.m. on a Wednesday, and it was full of people pensively kind of toying with their cups of tea.
And it was like the 90s.
They were toying with their pints. And it just felt very, it felt really like a moment. Like I remember walking along and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe it's today that we're playing in a World Cup semi-final. And it did feel like something, a very different experience.
Yeah.
Well, that comes to, I just want one word answers on this. What would you take now if I offered it to you? What point for England would you take now if I offered it to you? We'll start with, I think 40s are the most interesting. So on this topic. So we'll start with Skull, who I describe as the mean, and then we'll see Michael and Fordy. I'm going to say now, if you offered me now semi-final defeat and you said it was glorious, like a close defeat, I would take it.
What? But why would you take defeat? I'm not going to take anything other than a glorious win.
So you wouldn't be happy. So
I'm not going to negotiate.
I tell you why I would.
Not negotiate with terrorists. Yeah. You tell him, Scully.
Why do you hate our way of life, John?
Yeah. I tell you why I would take it, because I still talk about 1990, 1996, and 2018 as three of the best experiences of my life, and they were semi-final defeats.
Yeah, but
if you said to me now that would be what I was about to experience again, if someone said to me now, would you take a rerun of 2018 now? Of course I would, because I loved it.
But you talk about those things because they're open wounds. You're counselling yourself, aren't you? You're trying to process the trauma of losing it. I don't want more trauma. I don't want to think about... I still think about that Harry Kane miss against Croatia all the time. I don't want another one of those.
It's
talk
a
about
pleasure
the
pain thing though, isn't it? It's the joy of defeat.
It's just...
No. Michael?
Well, I guess... If I can slightly rephrase the question that makes it easier to answer, is like, what's the minimum I would take? Yeah. Because if you're asking what would you take, I'd be like, well, I'll take a glorious 10-0 victory against Germany in the final.
Yeah, phase. Yeah. No, what's the minimum?
But it's more like, what would you leave the tournament going, okay, this is a positive thing,
yeah,
even if we didn't win it. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think we have to get to the final.
Yes.
No.
I think anything less than the final would feel like, you know, we got to the semi-final of the World Cup, and yes, as discussed, we were lucky, you know, with our side's draw, and you know, we weren't a semi-final worthy team, I would argue, but we got there. I think anything other than the final now, in a weaker field of teams, because it's the Euros, not the World Cup, our squad is better. We've got better players. The management and the coaches are more experienced at this level. I think anything less than the final, win or lose, I think it isn't progress. I think we've gone back a step.
I'm not looking for progress, Michael. I'm looking for romance and glory.
But that is romance.
Sound like Boris Johnson.
Imagine the romance, Josh, of being in the fan park for that semi-final victory and knowing that we've got through to the final of a major tournament. I'm not saying I don't want it.
I'm saying I believe that were England to be defeated gloriously by France in the semi-finals of Euro 2020-21, then I think we would all, 5 days on, be happy with how it had gone.
I think I'd enjoy that experience, but at the end of it, I think 5 days later, I'd feel like I'd been served a meal I'd already eaten before.
But what a meal.
I want to taste something new. Put some new spice on that steak.
As a man that bought Thai abs and put them in his freezer because he was moving outside of the postcode. Okay. Now, what's interesting is this is the point when we move on to discuss England, which is worrying because we've been discussing them for 49 minutes. Let's start. Do you know what? I've done some research because I thought someone should do some punditry on this. I want to pose a question. At the time recording, England are at their 33-man squad. And what I'm interested in is players that have been to major tournaments who maybe in hindsight you'd be surprised or don't think should have gone to major tournaments. And I've looked at every England squad since 1990.
Amazing.
Do you want me to run you through my Hall of Fame of players you wouldn't believe had been to an international tournament?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Great.
Some nice backing music, please, Michael. 1990, all of them acceptable. 1992, we will come back to that. 1994, not applicable. 1996, all of them acceptable. 1998, all of them acceptable. 2000, all of them acceptable. 2002, 2004, all of them acceptable. 2006, Stuart Downing. <laughs> 2008, not applicable. 2010, Stephen Warnock.
What?
Whoa.
No way. Oh, my there God. We go. That is desperate, isn't it?
2012, John Ruddy.
Don't say it.
And Andy Carroll.
Shut up.
Oh, yeah. Did he score against Sweden?
He did. Yep. He did.
2014, Ricky Lambert.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
2016, Nathaniel Klein. That feels borderline to me. 2018, I'm going to say it, Fabian Delph.
Some people love Fabian Delph, don't they? I think statistically he's good.
I think time will tell that Ruben Loftus-Cheek will be added to the list as well.
Imagine a world in which you're not taking Trent, but you had to take Nathaniel Klein to a major tournament.
just a few years earlier.
In right backs over 5 years. Shall we return to 1992?
Yes.
I've written down five names for Euro 92. Keith Curl.
Wow.
Andy Sinton.
Sinton, yeah.
Neil Webb. Mm. Of course. Carlton Palmer and Tony Daly. Considering I couldn't come up with any other names from the up until 2006, that is some tournament squad, isn't it, 1992?
Yeah, how much of that do you think is genuinely sort of poor selection policy by Graham Taylor? Or was it just a really unfortunate kind of end of an era transition where all of those good players had gone and there just weren't enough coming through?
Well, Michael, how about, I don't know whether you can be bothered with this, but how about before the next preview show, we have a look to see if there's who missed out on Euro 1992, to see if there's some great lost players that Keith Curl, Andy Sinton, Neil Webb, Carlton Palmer and Tony Daly were preferred to.
Okay, I'll take that challenge.
Okay, how do we feel about Gareth Southgate? Skull?
I will go first. I have serious reservations about Gareth Southgate. I don't feel like he's the right man. I still like, and Michael and I are agreed on this, like we would love to have seen Big Sam carry on the job. And you look at what Brendan Rodgers is doing, I like him. But in my mind, Gareth Southgate is still like a caretaker manager for Middlesbrough with poor results. Like, just look at his managerial career before England. I know everyone raves about him, we got to the semi-final, but I just don't feel like he's the charismatic man to lead this generation of fantastic footballers to glory. For me, like if England aren't going to win this tournament, the next best thing for me is let's just go out in disastrous terms so that we get rid of Southgate. However,
that's astonishing. And who would you think they'd bring in?
I'd want Brendan Rodgers.
I don't think he'd take the job.
Well, I know he's Northern Irish, isn't he? But he seems to, I don't know, I just feel like...
Yeah, it could go either way, that.
Yeah. I want a leader. I want a charismatic leader of the national team. And Gareth Southgate is not that. The man wears a waistcoat. That said, I will be cheering him on.
Scully, can I say, I can't believe you like Allardyce as England manager.
He would just grind out results, wouldn't he? He would...
No!
He would... He's got 100% record, 40.
You know what? I can't believe... And I think I'm unusual. I really like Southgate.
Yeah, I like Southgate.
I like his approach.
What do you like about
his track record with England? Well, firstly, he's got us playing football again. I mean, that is the first time we've actually played really good football at that World Cup. And you're like, well, finally we look like a team that hosts the Premier League. Like, it's actually had some benefit. I think I like his approach. I like the fact he's methodical. I think international management is different to club management. I think it's a different set of skills. I think he knows how to manage these individuals. And I think so much of it is just putting them at ease. That penalty shootout against Colombia was incredible for the psychology of it. And that cutaway of him, he looked completely composed, Southgate. And I think he's had a huge effect on them. I think he's totally lifted whatever spell was over the England unit that was that pressure and that was that negativity. And I think he's just calmly, methodically removed it. And I think he has a really logical approach. He's not sensational. He's not flair. But he reassures me. And I think actually modern football, young footballers who play for him will find that hugely motivating. I just think he's onto something. I really think he is. This,
I feel very, very excited hearing all that because I totally agree. I think he's strong as well. I don't think he doesn't even feel like he makes gaffes or he feels like, you know, he's all over the shop. There's nothing where he's trying to play Wayne Rooney in midfield in the last friendly before the tournament. It feels like he knows what he's doing. Do you know what I mean? Whereas it feels like always previously, Roy Hodgson, suddenly Harry Kane was taking corners and Wayne Rooney was playing in midfield. And you were like, what is the grand plan here? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Whereas with Southgate, it does feel like he's using the 3 months between every game to genuinely decide what matters and what's going on.
Yeah. He seems completely rational.
Michael?
I think I'm somewhere between the two. I'm also an advocate for Big Sam, but back then, not now. I wouldn't want to
be losing patrons hand over fist, mate.
All I'm saying is Big Sam beats that Croatia team. That's all I'm saying. We're in the final of the World Cup in 2018.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are. But that's by and by. I think with Southgate, I agree with everything that Josh and Fordy have said. Southgate is like the lovely, nice primary school teacher rebound after a really toxic 3-4-decade-long relationship. But I don't think Southgate's making you a better man. I don't think Southgate is winning a tournament with this team. So I'm glad we've had him. I'm glad he's helped shift the mentality the way it needs to be. And I love that he steadied the ship. And I think we will see the benefits of that. But I think we need someone else to come in now and just take us to that extra place. We need a winner. Like, Southgate isn't a winner at club level as a player or as a manager. I don't think he has the experience. And I don't think at elite level, when it's fine margins, I don't think he has it in his locker. I watched Luka Modric basically deflate our entire England team and Southgate stood on the sidelines and did nothing. He watched us bleed out. He could have made a fucking tactical change. He's like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, lovely man, loves England. He's done a great job at like addressing problems and the toxicity that existed at club and for England international level. But I don't think he's got it there to take us to the next level.
He feels like a caretaker, doesn't he? He doesn't feel like he's got the job.
There is nothing on his CV that says England will win a tournament with him at the helm.
Yeah, but there might be. We've not seen his CV. Surely he'd have put that on.
But don't you think we've got elite players, ultimately?
Yeah.
You've got Kane and Foden, Grealish. You've got these incredible creative talents that actually, whatever Southgate's shortcomings, could be overcome by the talent we have on the pitch.
That's where we would have to disagree, because I think you need everything to converge at the right time. And also on top of all of that, you know, Pep Guardiola in charge of that England team might not win it. You need luck. You need things to fall your way. And I think even if all of the things that should do fall our way, I don't think Southgate is the man from the managerial perspective to help nudge it as well. I just think he will always be found out. And I think we'll see it again.
What a sad ending. Let's end
by asking a simple question.
I feel like I've just been in a press conference with Rob Shepherd. Come on, Rob. Get on her face
cheer
and write
up.
Yours.
Cheer up. Cheer up.
Come on, Rob.
No, I'm just worried about where we're going.
Will England win a major tournament in our lifetime?
Yeah. So I actually do see a lot of parallels between where we are now and where Spain were just before they went on that run of winning. You know, where you just see can just see that generation of talent emerging, and it's actually they're doing it at club level. All those players, like they had that fantastic generation at Barcelona and they were going into the national team and it was translating there. You think the backbone of this England squad is working with people like Guardiola and Klopp, and they're at the very, very top of their game, winning trophies regularly on the continent. So these are, it's different now. And I think, you know, look at also the kids that I think we've won the under-18 World Cup. Basically, as Foden went through the ranks, he was winning World Cups in the England youth team. It's like, it's happening. This generation is coming on now, and it feels like everything is set up for success so much better than it's ever been before. So I'm more hopeful than I've ever been that England are going to win a trophy. I think, and we could be about to witness it right here.
Yes. I reckon you could cut that piece of audio out and end with saying, and Sven-Göran Eriksson's the man to do it. And that is exactly what we were all saying in 2006. Yeah, it's exactly what everyone was saying in 2006.
It really is.
And I'd like to start with the omens, with the omen list that you wanted to make, Skull. I'd say Phil Foden winning the under-17s World Cup has to be up there with the most pointless omens of all time. As well as, it feels a bit like when it happened to Spain. That's another one. Michael, where will we finish? And will we ever win a World Cup or Euros?
I don't think we will win a major tournament in my lifetime. I think we will lose in the semi-finals, but I want us to lose in the final. I don't want us to lose in the final. My dream would be
to lose in the final.
My dream would be that we get to the final. I think we will lose in the semi-finals.
Matt, have you put 100 quid on at William Hill?
No, not yet. I think we will win a major tournament in my lifetime because I know 66 was before any of us were born, but it has been done before. We do host the best domestic league in the world. The England national setup now, for the first time in probably more than a generation, is finally heading in the right direction. We are producing an incredible amount of talent. And I think whether it's Southgate or whether it's whoever follows next, we're on a different trajectory now. And we just have, I cannot go through life believing that we're never going to win anything. I can't carry that. I have to believe. So yes, yes. Yes.
Okay. Good. It's been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to follow the tournament with you all. It's going to be hopefully one of the great summers of our lives.
Yes. I can't wait.
That Croatia game's big, isn't it? That first one. That's a big game for the first one. It's kind of crept up on me a bit. But I was thinking today, that is big. That really going to put a marker down for the tournament.
But don't forget, we beat them at Wembley in the Nations League the year after the World Cup.
That's an omen right there.
Glorified friendly, but yes, we'll take it.
Do you think we'll beat Croatia in the first game?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. I think we will.
We always start tournaments slow, don't we? Like, you think of the parallels of Euro 96, that draw against Switzerland. I think we could be heading for a 0-0, 1-1. But we will
get
better.
Do you know what? The parallels to Euro 96, if we're looking for omens, we're playing Scotland in the second game. Yeah.
I think Wembley with fans after all this, and then we get to have our group games at Wembley with fans back in. I think you can't take that out of it. The home advantage, the feeling in the country, all that stuff is real.
Do you know what also? Because it's a Sunday afternoon, isn't it? It's 2 p.m. Is it going to be a sunny day? It's the first weekend. It's going to look very similar. Red and white against England. It's gonna have striking similarities to that first game against Switzerland, isn't it? In look. Oh, would you take 1-1 now?
Yes.
Would you?
Yeah, just so we don't lose the first game.
Yeah, well, that is a bleak end.
And if you draw with Croatia, like we drew with Croatia, they were in the World Cup final.
Well, just before we wrap up, we've discussed Gareth Southgate there. Obviously, Gareth Southgate was the man who destroyed Euro 96, so he has got the opportunity here to redeem himself or indeed make things worse.
I thought it was Darren Anderton. He should have scored.
So we're going to introduce a new feature called the Gareth Southgate Atonometer. Do send us your thoughts on where he is on the Atonometer. Has he done enough to be forgiven?
Where does he start? Because 2018, must have taken him to quite a point of atonement, hasn't it?
I don't think it's enough. I still think he should be damned. But I'm glad he's got this opportunity. He's got one more chance for me. If he ruins three tournaments, forget it.
That is unforgivably harsh. Matt, we hope to see you later in the tournament.
Yes, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm genuinely so excited for the Euros now. Thank you very much. If you want to do the Patreon, it's patreon.com/quicklykevin. Otherwise, you know, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter, all that kind of stuff.
Robbie Slater, see you later.
Go let! Hit! Let! Hit!